Wait, did you hear?
No.
We're diving into the juiciest celebrity profiles of all time.
I'm Beatrice Hazelhurst.
And I'm Ivana Ryder.
This is Uncover Girl.
I had the best day of my life today.
No!
Best day of my life.
I'm so happy to hear that. What happened?
Do you want to know a little bit about what's happening?
Absolutely.
So I'm getting, I'm in the process of getting my veins fixed. Veins done.
Yeah.
Varicose veins runs in my family and it was now or never, literally. Well, it was now or 5 years or 10 years. And they did tell me it's the worst I'd ever seen for someone of my age. So did I tell you that?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean...
I know.
That at least justifies it.
It does. It does. They did an ultrasound and they were like, oh, good God. Oh, wow. And then they asked me if I'd been pregnant, which no one ever likes to hear.
My God.
Yeah. Yeah. Put then your pipe and smoke
If you
it.
Had been like, if you like, have you carried many children to term?
Yes. Because your veins are that clotted.
Anyway,
so they're getting like lasered off or whatever they're doing. They're shutting them down. And because of that, I can't work out. Like I'm not allowed to like lift anything. So, and I'm a lifting girl. Like, yeah. I pick up weights and I put them down. That is my preferred exercise. That's all I do. So I'm trying to find alternative ways to exercise. And I've like landed on yoga.
Amazing.
Yeah. Today was my first class. I did a headstand.
Oh,
I've never, ever, Dua Lipa style, been able to do a headstand.
Oh my God.
I didn't know how to set it up. I didn't know how to execute. And this very hot, gay French instructor who Perfect. Then went on to invite everybody to Costa Rica for a yoga retreat where there would be a plant wellness ceremony. And then he went, who here has done ayahuasca? I am not lying to you. This is it was such a cliche. I was like, I need to put this in a book. It was unbelievable. He was like, oh, no, that's not how you do it. That's not how you do it. He was like, you need to like put two legs together and then kind of like pop up. And I did it.
Oh my God.
That was the first thing.
That's incredible. Well, let's take a moment with that.
Okay.
Because that's so hard. And that's so incredible. And that's so fun.
Well, more than anything, it's so scary.
Yeah.
It's really, really scary.
You're just up there.
You're just up there trying to hold it together.
Were you free on the floor
or
up
against the wall?
Flee on the ground.
Just buzzing around. Just fleeing out.
Free. That's incredible.
Yeah. Free falling. And then I went to Sweet Lady Jane, shout out, my favorite little dessert shop in town. Because I went to get a coffee in Larchmont and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to stop by and get my favorite raspberry oat slice. Turns out, cash machine down, have to give it to me for free. Have to do it.
Oh.
Tell me that's not the best day you've ever had.
That's a fantastic day.
And I feel like we've been so low of late. You know, the news has been so bad. We're in a full, you know, astrological transition, which we've been talking about ad nauseum. And it just feels like we're turning a page.
I feel that way too. I feel there's a lightness in the air.
Yes.
There's a sweet jasmine breeze that's been kind of blowing through my windows.
No. And we're in, especially in Los Angeles, we're in the only time of year where it's like, perfectly neutral.
Yeah.
The June gloom hasn't set in yet. It's sunny outside.
Oh, I forgot that was coming.
It's coming. It's coming in a big way. We're about to settle once again into the depths of the gray.
Oh my God, that's so true. Well, yoga also came into my life in an interesting way this week, which is that my angel, Bubba, my wonderful Bubba, who I'm so close to, she did yoga all growing up. And she kind of was doing it like before it was chic. Like she was just doing it like in our little shared room that her and I shared in Canada. She had this book called 28 Days of Yoga that she would do it out of. That's like how she learned it entirely is through this book.
Okay.
And I was walking and there was like a little book fair outdoors.
You found it.
I found it.
No.
And I can't tell you how strange this book is. Like the full title of the book is like how to do yoga for health and to be beautiful and skinny. Like it's like that's the full title of the book.
Wait.
And it talks
that for real.
I have to find it. Let me find it. 28.
It's to be beautiful.
Yes, it is to be beautiful. A dramatically different 4-week exercise plan that unlocks the secrets of a lifetime of health, beauty and profound peace of mind.
Well, I mean, that's a selling point. Like, yeah. I'd pick that up and
this is what it looks like
and crack it open. Oh, whoa.
Yeah. And it's old. Okay. It was like published in the 60s and I found it and just, I'm going
to
do it.
And just to explain, it's someone sitting down, keeled over in various kind of states. Sort of half forward fold.
Yeah. It looks like anamorph, but it's one person.
It's one person.
And
they're
just kind of going up and down. I'm going to do that.
Just give it a go.
I know.
Honestly, it does remind me. I was watching White Lotus with my parents and they were like, what's tantric? They asked me
where do I begin?
What tantric was. And I said, it's a type of sex where you have to really connect with your partner with the eyes, with the touch.
The breath.
And they said, I'm so glad you're here to tell us that.
I forget about awkward, like watching sex scenes with your parents.
And for the roles to reverse in that moment, I mean, I'm sure we grew up being like, what's a blowjob?
God, that's terrible. How do you respond to something like that?
What's a blowjob?
Yeah.
I mean, God, my parents had to walk me through some stuff. They put me in some situations for sure.
Really?
Oh God, yes.
That's tough.
I mean, yeah, how do you break it down for the layman?
And like, how do you break it down in a way that's like non-sexual?
Because there's also like no biological point, right? No. You're not being like, well, you know, this is to create life. It's mm-hmm. a beautiful practice. It's like, what does a blowjob achieve essentially? I mean, it brings the penis into full, it raises the flag.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
No way around that.
It's a quick and effective way to do so. Yeah.
That's so true. It's so true.
But it's like, how do you communicate that to a child?
How do you communicate that to a child?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the day, the sort of like sex talk day at school. We were separated, boys and girls. I don't know if this happened to you, but in the fifth grade, that was like when everyone learned about sex and what a period was and like all
we
that stuff.
We never got separated. Everything was...
No. So they separated the boys. They put them in a room and there was a different video for the boys. And then they separated us and there was a different video for the girls. And everybody ran out of the classroom. It was like a movie. Everyone ran out, all pointing at each other's parts and going like, you have a penis. Like, you have a penis in there. God. And then they were like, oh my God, like we know what's going on there now. Ew.
Did you also feel that teachers in middle school, there was something about them.
Yeah.
They were very... I don't want to say like sexual, but they were very like clued into our sexuality in a way that when you look back on it was weird.
Yes.
Like I remember like a teacher saying to me like, Beatrice and Ben, like stop playing footsies back there.
Yeah. Oh
like,
my God. I remember that too.
We weren't.
Yeah.
We literally weren't. We were like picking up a pencil.
Yeah.
Like why are you over sexualizing us? We're 11 years old, sir.
We're 11. Yeah.
I watched a teacher drop kick a dog. I'll never forget it. I like, it was the most insane time. He picked up a dog and kicked it like a rugby ball, like drop kicked it.
Oh my God. Well, I had a teacher throw a chair across the room. Stage combat teacher. He got really frustrated with us. He threw a chair across the room.
I was gonna
like, someone had to duck to miss it.
Well, I mean, that's probably an occupational hazard that just comes with just the anger issues. He's in the right field.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, it's, I mean, drama teachers, not to even say. I mean, were getting way too personal.
Oh,
God.
My God. I mean, I had a private scene study. Me and my boyfriend at the time, we were doing a very intense scene from a very intense play called Danny and the Deep Blue Sea. And he like made us like tap into the child sex we were having at the time. He was like, tap in to like that lust, like when you touched her for the first time. We're alone in a classroom with our 40-year-old teacher. He's like, writhe around, you know, oh my God, the things that happen, unspeakable.
No, I really, really hate that.
Yeah, that was bad.
But it was always kind of like that. And like high school, everything evened out. People like, they were like, we don't have time for this. We're so tired. You're off to next period. Just keep it moving.
Yeah.
What was it about like middle school that they were like, we are really aware of what's going on in your bodies. And like,
you're changing, aren't you?
Yeah, aren't you? Aren't you?
Yeah.
I remember a teacher being like, everyone here should be having two showers a day.
Two showers a day. That's not good for your skin.
That's so much.
That's too much.
What do you think we're doing?
Yeah.
We all had to like also submit anonymous like questions and they pulled them out and read them and I changed my handwriting.
So oh my God.
So they know which one was mine.
FBI.
They were like, I'm not going to answer any silly questions. And they pulled out mine and then just put it back.
What was your question?
And I was being earnest. I was being genuine. What is the anus good for?
Good for? Tattoo it on me. That's powerful. Oh my God. That could have been a real opportunity.
I thought so too.
That's devastating.
Clearly they didn't know how to answer it.
No, no.
I think I was being really serious. Like, I was like, what is the anus good for?
Yeah.
He could have been like, yeah, there's a prostate up there for like the men.
It could be pleasurable. Yeah. Like, if we're talking about, you know, same sex, like intimacy.
Yeah, I actually wanted to know.
Of course you did.
Thank you.
It's horrible that they tossed your curiosity aside.
I know. And I knew he'd know my handwriting, so I disguised it. Which I thought was the foresight of that, I think, quite astute. Yeah.
Well, do you know what I was doing at 10 p.m. last night?
What?
Getting a Brazilian.
Ooh, why? Why don't you shave like a regular person?
I cannot.
Why?
That does not work for me.
Why? Do you get ingrowns?
Yes. Oh my God, no. It is not even remotely a possibility for me.
Really?
Shaving, I could not shave. I could absolutely not.
I've been a Barbie for 10 years. Like, I can shave my entire top to toe.
That's insane.
Really?
No, I can never. I've been waxing since I was like 13 years old. Speaking of middle school, that's where it all began, because it was PE in middle school where I was like, please let me shave my legs. My mom was like, absolutely not. We don't shave in this house. You wax.
Are you joking? You were waxing?
I was waxing.
Your entire leg back then?
I was, no, below the knee.
Yeah, of course, because it's too slutty above the knee.
Because it's too slutty above
the
knee.
Yeah, that was so fucked up.
That's where you draw the line. Literally the knee?
Literally the knee. And it was a line. It was a dark line.
Yeah. Yes. Where my long braided thigh hair lived free.
God forbid, we were all in a fucking mini short, weren't we?
Yeah.
With like a hairy thigh and this smooth calf.
Why? What?
Why did we need a hairless shin?
I don't know.
I had a 12-year-old girl say to me when I was 11, acting like she's my older sister, like, if you're going to wear shorts like that, you should really start shaving.
I mean, I had
of course, say, yeah. I went home and pulled out a razor and said,
yeah,
let me get at
cut
this.
Your leg off.
Yeah, yeah.
Just yeah. Cut it at the knee.
But I also said to my sister's friend, like, who was 16, why do you shave above the knee?
Yeah.
And like slut shaming her to her face, because that's all I knew. And she said, because I wear shorts that come up here. And I was like, yeah, but why do you need to? Why do you feel like you need to?
Whore.
Is it your boyfriend that's pressuring you to do that?
Yeah, it must be.
God, I've been judgmental coming out of the womb.
No, that's okay. But I was shocked to find out that Sugared and Bronzed is open until 11 p.m.
It's crazy.
11 p.m.?
They want those corporate girlies who stay till 9 p.m.
Yeah.
They want you drunk off a couple of like dirty martinis.
That's actually, no. And I came home and I was like, I should have taken a shot before. And he's like, oh, but I don't think you can, right? Like that's, and I was like, I think that's tattoos that you can't drink before a tattoo because you'll bleed.
That's
like,
what Steven said.
Yeah. He's like, I don't think that would be safe. And I was like, I think it would be just fine. Two margaritas.
No, alcohol enhances the pain. You know that, right? That's why you're not supposed to do it before tattoos as well. Well, it thins the blood. So it can make tattoos bleed. And I know because I have a very wavy rose right above the pelvic bone.
Yeah.
We'll leave it there after a bottomless brunch. Yeah, it can make it way more painful.
Oh my
way
God.
More painful.
Oh, thank God.
No, you really
I came
can't
in
drink.
Sober. I came in completely sober.
Good.
So good.
Good. So you went and got waxed.
I did.
And now you're just a plucked chook?
Yeah. Barbie.
Wow. Do you feel good?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really game changing.
I know. But it's tough because it's like, you know, speaking of your procedure, my procedure that there was never a good time for was getting laser hair removal. And I did my bikini line because I was like, when I'm 40, am I going to regret this? Am I going to regret?
You had that conversation.
Yeah, I was like, at 40, am I going to be like, you dumb bitch.
I want my hair back. Never in a million years.
I
got laser hair removal, but never, it doesn't like go away.
No.
They hook you with those 6 sessions and convince you that's going
to
be it.
I got 8 to 10.
You got 8 to 10?
I got 8 to 10. Well, I told you that it was intense. I mean, my God.
Painful.
I mean, it's Eastern European. It's, you know,
yeah.
It's like I've got a lot of hair up top, got a lot of hair on bottom.
Mm, but you've got the perfect skin for it. White.
That's what they told me.
Yeah.
But
white
yeah,
skin with
they
dark
were like,
hair.
This is really going to be something. And
yeah.
I was like, thank you.
Yeah. For me, they didn't like it.
No.
The hair too light.
Oh,
skin
God.
Too light. All bad. It's all bad.
God damn it.
I know. Snow White would have killed it up in there in that laser.
Oh my God. She would have had nothing left.
God. No. Just... The dwarves being like,
wow, you look amazing, sweetheart.
My inspiration is also women related.
Oh my God.
Kim Kardashian, I gotta say. She has inspired me. She has inspired me.
Tell me more.
Skims has launched a flagship store in Los Angeles, which feels kind of overdue, but I was invited. to that opening. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can.
Kind of crazy.
I have no trouble believing that.
I don't really know why, because I feel very out of the game. But it was, Ivana, a $3 million event. She pulled out so many stops. So many stops. One might say all the stops. She took over a diner next to the store, Mel's Diner, which is a very famous establishment.
I love it there.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I love going there.
And like, this is usual to kind of like have menu items and to, you know, I don't know, have like a themed drink. Lots of kind of brands do that all the time. Kim took it a step further. She had nude colored convertibles sitting outside, Skims themed, of course. She had a Skims sign where the Mel's sign would usually be. It was just like a huge, like, what are those illuminated signs called?
Neon?
Yeah, neon illuminated. Yep. She had a Skims photo booth, like branded Skims photo booth. She had retiled the entire diner in Skims nude and cream tones. Mm. She'd retiled the bathrooms also. She'd retiled the bathrooms.
I mean, that is the attention to detail that I feel has made her famous.
The napkins, of course, had Skims on it. The pancakes had Skims with icing sugar. The milkshakes, everything was so branded. I have actually never been to an event like it. I have never seen so much money put into an event.
Yeah.
It was like stepping into another planet. We spoke to the owner briefly, Chris and I, and he was like, oh yeah, she shut us down for like 3 days. The most we've ever been shut down is like a day for an event.
Yeah.
It is like, this has been an extravaganza.
It's a good idea and it's fun.
It was actually very fun. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And it was so contentable. Like everything.
The pancakes?
Are you kidding? Everything was content. I mean, us sitting in these booths, just nibbling on a Skims pancake. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
We're going to need Skims after it. I'll tell you that much.
Have you used them?
The shapewear,
yeah.
No. But I got one of those. They gave us one of those things that look like baby's clothes.
Yeah. That's what they are.
Yeah.
It's like, there's no possible way that this could fit onto my body.
I could hold it up and you would laugh.
No, I have one. I have one in my underwear drawer.
You do?
I have one.
Do you wear it?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I can understand. I think that I just...
What would you use it for?
I got it for like a dress for a wedding that was like linen-y. So it's like, you know, like every... Like if I wore underwear, it would show in a way that I didn't want. But I don't know what's going on or if I just have too much ass. But it really cuts.
You do have a lot of ass.
Mid-cheek.
Yeah, no.
It cuts mid-cheek. So it's sort of... It's a double ass. I've got two at that point.
It's designed for ass. I mean, she's famously the ass girl.
That's kind of why I'm like, how could this be possible?
Right. How could it be possible? I got a little bit caught up in the moment and I bought a Skim set.
You bought one there?
I bought one there.
Oh my God.
Which I will be returning this weekend.
Oh shit.
I know. It's fine. I just got home and I was like, why did I do this?
Well, then it worked.
Then it worked.
Then it literally all worked. You went,
I am such a consumer. I can't even walk into a Target. You got to like get me out of anywhere. I can convince myself to buy anything.
Yeah.
I'm in a Panda Express. Yeah. I'll take the apple pie. Yeah, I will. You put me in a CVS. Do I need a new eyeliner? Probably.
Yeah.
I can't tell you the last time I went into a supermarket without getting a chocolate bunny just because there's an Easter station.
I know.
And I just think, well, that's a bit of fun.
That's nice.
A bit of fun, isn't it? Yeah. come on. I went in to buy more sellotape to hang up our signs.
Yeah.
By the way, if you see our signs out there, take a little pic. Tag us.
They're all over.
I was getting more sellotape to hang up our signs in a little pavilion at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning. And I was like, you know what I need? I need some chocolate eggs. Chris will love these.
Yeah.
He'll be so tickled by these. He felt no kind of way. He was totally ambivalent when I handed them over. I need the rush of consuming. I need to feel something.
Well, it is a rush. And that's why I'm in a no buy year. This is a year where I'm not buying anything.
Oh, God.
And it is because the rush, once I've felt it, once I've that high has hit me, I want to go back. I want to do it again.
Yeah, it's my vice.
I go into frenzies, you know, and that makes it sound really unhealthy, and probably it is. But it's like I'm either nothing, like cold turkey, or I'm fully in. I'm like buying kind of like new wardrobe, new stuff, new things, stuff for the house, stuff all around.
The one thing I'll say I'm not buying is clothes. I am Amazing. Not buying clothes right now. I'm really impressed with myself.
Yeah.
Can't remember the last time I got a package in the mail that had clothes in it. So I'm that's like, so true. that's not me. I'm buying a lot for like the business.
Yeah.
I'm buying a lot of like tech stuff. Tech. Yeah.
And tech's hard because tech's expensive.
It's so expensive. Yeah. And it's so not fun.
Yeah.
Like when I see the package, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Like Chris is like, aren't you so excited to open your new laptop? And I'm like, no, I'm dreading it.
Yeah.
I'm dreading setting up a new laptop, transferring my data. Are you kidding me?
I know.
There's nothing I can think of that's worse. He's like, no, it's a new toy. I'm like, no, it's a new torture device.
Yeah.
I don't want to play with it.
Yeah. I don't want that.
No.
It also is crazy. Like, I forget that there are other people in other careers that don't use their laptop.
Yes.
That, like, they can leave their laptop at home.
They can travel without
their laptop? 2 weeks without a laptop. Like, wouldn't bring one on vacation. And I'm like, I've never been anywhere without my laptop.
I know. Including the wilderness. It's like a right hand.
Yeah. I went backpacking without my laptop, but I was stressed.
How often do you, like, watch TV and stuff without your laptop open? Because mine is almost always open.
Mine's open a lot.
Yeah.
Mine's open a lot.
Yep.
And that's not good.
It's kind of really dangerous. Don't recommend. I know.
They really are not recommending that. Do you look at your phone first thing in the morning also?
Yep, of course. Of course. I gotta find out what's going on.
I know. Do you open?
No, what's I actually try not to open. We've never spoken about this.
Yeah, I know.
And this is a very common topic.
Yeah.
I roll over.
What's your morning routine?
Yeah, roll over, check the time.
Okay.
I see the damage. I just assess the damage of like how many notifications. Yes. Yeah. And then I'm like, not gonna deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I carry on with my day. And then I'm being vulnerable right now. I'm admitting something. Then I take my phone and I put my headphones in. This is I'm talking 6:15, 6:30 a.m. I open Peacock and I put on Southern Charm and I go about my day.
6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
It's playing on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Are you taking it with you?
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like you're like waking up, you're like getting dressed.
Like I'm like feeding the cats.
Yeah.
Making my breakfast. I'm getting dressed and it's in my ears.
And it's on as soon as, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, because oh my God. I really
this
can't
does
be
feel
without
intimate. It's like we're both naked super, here now.
I'm literally stark. I'm standing before you stark naked. Yeah. I'm like Margot Robbie in The Wolf of Wall Street, just like opening the doors.
Heels on, nothing else. Yeah, I get it.
I know. I really, it's really, really bad because I just like to be distracted and transported, and I'm a big rewards person.
Yeah.
And if I can associate like waking up and getting up with a reward, like watching my favorite show or having it playing, I can get through literally anything.
Well, it's like how I never used a treadmill more than when I was like, if I'm on the treadmill, I get to watch Gilmore Girls. And then I could be on there for hours.
Really?
Yes.
You never got bored on the treadmill even watching your show?
If I'm watching Gilmore Girls, I could walk till the ends of the earth.
Really?
Yeah. I had a ball. It was a perfect setup.
It's an ADHD brain because it's so fast. You can probably like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like engaged.
Yeah.
My morning routine, it's two. There are two ways that the morning can go.
Okay.
And it's. I cannot tell you how different they are. Morning one. This is the morning where I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
I do the things I need to do. I wake up. I usually always wake up between like 7:15 and 7:45.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up to the sound of Holly crying. I wake up. I get up. I let her out of her crate. That's like the first thing I do. I put my shoes on. I take her downstairs and I sit outside where my face touches the sun. Sometimes at that point, I've already looked at my phone, opened Instagram, checked all my messages, looked at emails. That's bad. That's not good. But sometimes I'm able to do this whole thing without looking at my phone. And then I bring my journal down and I write my morning pages on the steps of my backyard
while
Holly runs around going to the bathroom.
I can't hear about your morning pages. That's going to make me want to jump off a cliff.
No, but this only happens, you know, once in a blue moon.
Okay.
And that's like when I'm operating at perfect levels. But sometimes I have a morning where instead of bringing my journal down, I bring my phone down and I start watching like TikToks. I start just going through Instagram and then I will spend one full hour just on my phone in the morning, first thing in the morning. Advertisements, videos, TikToks, one full hour in the morning, which is the worst possible thing that I could do for myself.
For sure. That's kind of more what happened to me at night.
Yeah.
But have you noticed there's like literally a content hierarchy now? Like it for me, if I'm being good, I'm reading articles and then I'm listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
And then I'm watching TV. And at very worst, I'm watching Reels or like,
yeah.
It like is literally a hierarchy.
Yeah.
Like I'm like, I really shouldn't be watching Southern Charm on my phone. I should be like listening to a podcast.
Yeah.
I walk places watching TV. And I'm getting catcalled so much at the moment. I've been telling you this. And it's the only thing that gets me through. I know this sounds like an insane to say. It sounds like I'm fishing, but it's never. But if I have Southern Charm on, then I can kind of deal with it more. I just had a guy like pull up next to me and just like
never do
wait.
That.
I know someone's shouting at me. I know he's got his window down. And then he drove forward and pulled over. And I was like, if this guy's pulled over for me, I'm going to fucking lose it. Yeah. I've been in an angry mood. I'm going to literally lose it. And of course, he had pulled over to talk to me, window down, yelling at me out of his car. I couldn't hear because, of course, Southern Charm was playing. And then he's following me, Al Woods and Warner style. Just I'm walking he's yelling and talking and driving alongside me. And then he's getting onto a freeway entrance. This is on Sunset. Like, this is not a chill street.
Oh, my God.
It's so insane. I don't really know. I think I'm going to start wearing leggings or something. Speaking about ass.
You stepping out in like a parachute pants at all times.
Yeah, Grace Jones. I'm in too deep to ever acknowledge them. Like, I can't ever just like give a small wave. Like, it's too too hard now.
No.
And I know the time will come where this stops and I'll be like listening back to this episode like dumb bitch.
Yeah. Hands shaking.
Yeah.
At the kitchen table. Kids screaming in the background.
The old woman from the Titanic looking at the sketch and finding the sketch in the water. You just don't like to be perceived, obviously. You don't like to be seen.
No. I prefer to think that I'm invisible in public.
Until I put on my little heels, my miniskirt.
Exactly.
And then call away.
Yeah. Scream my name.
Yeah. Chant it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beatrice.
Imagine the fans.
That would be amazing.
It would, of course. My God, nothing would feel better.
Speaking of Emmanuel's fans and raw sexuality.
Yeah.
This writer brings up his sexuality so much. Like literally frothing, drooling.
I know.
All but writing, fuck, he's sexy.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, there's a lot actually, there's a lot of backstory here. I've done quite a lot of research for this one.
Oh, tell me.
A lot of research. Because you may not know this, I went to college. And at my college, I took a class about sex in film from Victorian area. From the Victorian.
Did you go to college?
Oh my God, I didn't.
Did you take a class?
It's not clear now. From the Victorian era to present.
Okay.
And there is a figure that keeps getting brought up like over and over again in this piece, which I do want to explain sort of like from the get-go because it's brought up so much. But they keep talking about Denzel Washington as like the new Sidney Poitier.
I thought you were going to say the new Sidney Sweeney.
The new Sidney Sweeney. This profile from 1995. Who was a very prominent actor. He was the first black man to win an Oscar for best actor, the very first, in 1964. And in 1967, he was in this movie called Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. And in the movie, he portrayed a black man that comes to dinner to his like white fiance's house. And it's kind of about that and the interracial politics. And it came out at a time when interracial marriage was still illegal in many parts of the United States.
Yeah.
So it was a very big deal. And he was like very much the first prominent black man, first like big actor. There were others, of course, like there have been, you know, people of color in the film industry and the music industry for a very long time. But in the 60s, this was a very big deal. And so Denzel, as we kind of like learn through this profile and as we've seen today, remains to be one of the biggest like black A-list actors of our time. And I mean, this profile is so interesting because it is so set in 1995. It's like absolutely crazy.
No, it's a timestamp. They are weaving in current events, pop culture news.
Yeah.
Things that are really happening in the moment.
Yes, very much. So the headline is A League of His Own. It's written by Lloyd Grove, who is editor at large at The Daily Beast from 2009 to 2021. Before that, he was a contributor at New York Magazine and like many places in Condé Nast. He also wrote a column for the Washington Post. He spent like 23 years there. He's like a, you know, veteran journalist. So he wrote this profile about Denzel and it came out in 1995. This was the year of Seal's Kiss from a Rose. Boys to Men were huge.
You leading with Kiss from a Rose.
Like after the Super Bowl, it feels top of mind. Did you see that ad?
No,
a kiss from the seal. It was very disturbing. They made him a seal.
They made Seal a seal?
Seal, yeah. They made him a seal. And then he was like singing.
God, among, people like, really debase themselves for
it's
those ads.
Crazy.
There's a price, isn't there? There's always a price.
Yeah, I know. Selena, she passed away this year.
Oh, 95.
I know, 95.
Wow.
Nirvana, Pearl Jam, like grunge music is having like the biggest moment ever. Mm-hmm. Everyone is in flannel and jumping around in Seattle. And Denzel is a huge, huge actor. And sort of like to talk a bit about what was happening. So Bill Clinton is president at this time. He was elected in 1993. Also in 1995, something rather big that was happening was the O.J. Simpson trial. I mean, it was everywhere. It was like on the front page of every newspaper, every gossip magazine. We were still kind of in the fallout from the Rodney King riots that happened in LA.
91 was that? Or 93?
91. Yeah. And then in like 1992, controversy and conversation around like what is happening to Black men in America.
And Rodney King was kind of George Floyd impacts, level yes. impacts back
oh
then.
My God. Yeah. Like changed, it like illuminated sort of, I mean, just like the horrific things happening in the justice like department, the police departments was like sort of a case heard around the world. And this feels so eerie to talk about. But in 1995, like a big contentious issue in politics was affirmative action, which like here we are decades later
again
talking about the repeal of DE&I. So
God, if anyone, if we could just fucking fly in peace.
I know.
The minority is supporting us, keeping us in air.
Also in 1995, Tupac released his album, Me Against the World, which also talked a lot about racial injustice, police violence, generally in like a post-war on drugs world, distrust of the man at this point. And I feel like that's all relevant to mention here because this profile, race comes up so much. And the fact that Denzel is a Black man is very much woven through kind of every paragraph of this piece.
Yeah.
It is.
Is Lloyd Black, the writer?
No.
Mm. No. Interesting.
No.
God, I gotta say, Denzel looks pretty hot.
Oh,
looks
my God. The
looks
photos
pretty fucking
are
hot.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's actually kind of the hottest I think we've ever seen
a man look
in one of these shoots. Like, I'm yeah, so serious.
I agree. I agree completely.
I he's never done it for me. Like, I've never watched Training Day and been like, that man mm-hmm. or like American, get him on me.
Yeah.
But this is kind of insane. That yeah. first photo, and obviously we'll post it, he has a crazy bone structure.
Oh my God. He's beautiful.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. I agree. And like styled so perfectly. Like, the colors are so powerful. Like, it's just like,
yeah,
it's really, it's amazing. And he's having, you know, I feel like he had a resurgence this year with Gladiator.
He did. He did.
And I remember.
And Othello on
yes,
Broadway.
Yes. And I remember seeing interviews.
Just a,
yeah.
a quick parlay no, there. That's the most expensive ticket that's ever graced Broadway.
Really?
Yeah. So the lowest, I think it's the cheapest ticket is
$800.
I think so.
Oh my God.
Maybe it's $400 or $500 in the nosebleeds. I heard the sum $800 for the cheapest ticket, but he's currently cast as Othello on Broadway, and it's the most expensive Broadway ticket on that goddamn strip.
Oh my God, I'm sure he's amazing.
Oh yeah, I mean, come on, he's
and
a shoo-in.
I have to say, I didn't actually understand until reading this. I remember, and I feel like we talked about this on the podcast even, Paul Mescal like did so many interviews around Gladiator being like, when I walked onto set with Denzel, like, it was the craziest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? Like, okay, yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, like, he's very talented and, like, you know. And now I'm understanding that, like,
He was such a big deal. Yeah.
He was such a big deal.
Well, I think it's that he's just such a natural actor. It must be bizarre to be in his presence. Like, this is someone who, unlike the Jeremy Strongs of the world, is really not taking it that seriously, but mm-hmm. is excelling in a way that few do. I mean,
box office hits, Academy Award winners.
Yeah.
Like, all kind of the accolades all
so
together.
So bankable and a critical darling. Who can you say that of now? Like, maybe Timothée Chalamet. And even that, like, it feels horrible to compare them.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like Denzel is literally in a league of his own. Oh God.
Oh my God.
The literal
God.
Title
it's
of the
title,
profile.
And it's true. Yeah. And it's really true. So I feel like we get into it.
Yeah.
So, okay. A League of His Own, obviously. So it opens. sitting alert in the back seat of a Toyota Lincoln Town Car that has ferried him from Manhattan to Mount Vernon, New York.
There's no Toyota.
Oh my God, did I say Toyota?
Toyota Lincoln Town Car.
That shows you what I know about cars.
You just trying to like put your make and model in any way you can. You're like
sitting in a 2007 Toyota Ferry. Toyota Prius red. The hottest car.
The Toyota Ferrari.
Keep it all in. We're not perfect and we never claim to be.
You know that my best and possibly only asset is my hair.
Oh my God, we can't go anywhere without you getting compliments.
Only because of the Megastar flat iron from New Me. I'm telling you, dude, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I'm going to throw some brands out. I used to be a GHD girl. I used to be a Harry Josh girl. I am only...
Chi.
What?
A Chi girl.
I used to be a Chi girl too.
Yeah, I know.
From now on, I'm only a New Me girl. I'm only a New Me Megastar flat iron girl. I'm telling you, it's the tourmaline technology. If you haven't heard of that, neither had I. It locks in moisture as it passes through your hair. So your hair doesn't get dry. It doesn't get fried. You can still control the heat.
And the infrared light strip prevents damage.
Oh, yeah.
Which is huge. So you can straighten as much as you want without having to worry about frying your ends.
This is an ad, but I'm being so genuine. This is such a good product.
Oh, and you're not the only one. I mean, it has 4.9 stars and 28,000 reviews.
28,000 reviews. You're in good company. I know that you have an old rusty straightener right now and you need an upgrade, and this is it. You can get 15% off the Megastar flat iron with the code UNCOVER. NUME hair.com with the code UNCOVER.
It opens. Actually, like this. Sitting alert in the back seat of the Lincoln Town Car that has ferried him from Manhattan to Mount Vernon, New York, Denzel Washington peers out of the tinted window and confronts the ghost of his childhood. You see this lady right here? Washington asks in a hushed voice as Mohammed, our driver, navigates past a high-rise housing project that has seen better days. He points out a plumpish, graying, sad-eyed lady in conversation with another woman.
Jeez, read her to filth, yeah, Lloyd. Know.
You destroyed this woman.
Plumpish, graying, sad-eyed lady.
Can you imagine?
That's how I get
catcalled.
That's
how you get catcalled. That's
hey, that's nice plumpish, yeah, sad eyes.
I think that's Miss McCutcheon. McCutcheon, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's Mrs. McCutcheon.
That's one of the guys I grew up with. I think that's his mom. I don't know what he's doing right now. He's one of my friends who went to prison for a while. Washington tells Muhammad to stop. Let me see. Gingerly, he cracks the door open and leans his baseball-capped head into the street. Stay here, though, he commands, and puts on a pair of sunglasses. Let me see if it's her first. And it was. It was hers.
And she can't believe it. No one can believe it. They're so excited. Mm-hmm. They immediately start taking photos. They're like, someone get the camera. Denzel's here.
Yeah.
And he's the movie star of the moment.
I know. And it's such a sweet scene because like more people arrive. Then there's another woman in her 60s shouting at the top of her lungs, bring the cameras. It's Denzel Washington. Bring the cameras.
He says, Mrs. Green, please.
I know.
Begging miserably, which only provokes her to shout louder. And then he just like hugs Mrs. McCutcheon goodbye and escapes to the safety of the town car.
Yeah.
This is wild, he exclaims. I don't ever just do that.
Yes.
So he's famous.
He's famous.
Yeah.
He is. And let me set everyone free with this next line. These are Denzel Washington's glory days. At 40, he has the kind of spectacular career that only a handful of film stars enjoy. A success based not just on his undeniable sex appeal, but also on his suppleness and his intelligence as an actor. And then he kind of lists some of his projects. So he was, you know.
Wait, why are you setting us free? Because he's 40?
Yeah, he's 40.
Yeah, but he's already had an insane career. That's true. What he's saying.
But
he's not the new coming ingenue.
I guess not, but I love a heyday in the 40s.
No, it's good. It's and better also, than him saying at 21. Good.
No. And there is a quote in here that's like, you know, where actually he compares himself to Hugh
Grant.
Grant.
Oh, I know.
Grant.
You really. Oh my God. Yeah, I know. It happens to me all the time.
Oh, fuck.
No, don't worry. But yeah, no, he's already been nominated for an Academy Award at this point. He's played Malcolm X.
Yeah.
I mean, Crimson Tide is coming out this year, and so is Devil in a Blue Dress. Like, it's like hit after hit after hit. Like, he's out here.
$10 million is like what he gets paid a movie.
Yeah.
They always love to bring this up in the 90s. They love
to bring this up. It's always the case. And it also reminds me of Julia Notting Hill. Yes.
Yes.
But you're thinking of the Julia Roberts profile. Yeah. I'm thinking of Julia Roberts and Notting Hill.
Wow. Where both of us thinking of Julia Roberts. Side by side, holding hands.
At the same time. When they say to her, oh my God, I hear it's really hard to make a living as an actress. Like, how much should they pay you? And she's like, $12 million a movie. Yeah. And that's what they were saying. That's what they were talking. They're just throwing out a sum.
Yeah. And now it's all so secretive.
It's so secretive.
How much did Ariana Grande make in Wicked? We'll never know.
Do you know? It was like a couple mil. Wasn't a lot.
Yeah.
And Cynthia got more.
Mm.
Yeah. Or they got paid exactly the same. There was some sort of like. Some clause. Yeah.
That's good. It is always crazy when.
But it's like, I don't know what Timothée Chalamet made on Dune. And I think so much of it is the whole back end.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're making so much on depending on how well the movie does. So it's like, we don't even really know. Like, I bet you were getting $10 million a picture and it was like, that was your deal. You were getting nothing on the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then agents came along and were like, what about if the movie makes way more?
Yeah. What happens then?
What happens then?
Yeah, I know. A great question to ask. Mm. And that's why an agent's so important.
We'd love one.
We'd love one. So Tom Hanks is now quoted.
Yeah, yeah. No, there are some crazy names that crop up in this profile. And Tom Hanks is one of them.
Yeah. He says, there's always the same names bandied about. And Denzel is somewhere really high up on that A-list. They were in a movie together, Philadelphia. He adds, the pure monetary motor that drives the motion picture industry would have him certainly at number one. Yeah. Denzel does this amazing thing of completely crossing over.
Then Lloyd throws in Robert Redford.
Crazy.
Like movie star Robert Redford, who says he's achieved something difficult and he's at kind of a crossroads as to what he's going to do with his achievements. He's a genuine force in the industry and in society.
Mm-hmm.
Then comes the director of Devil in the Blue Dress. Carl Franklin says he does have power. It's a star-driven industry. He brings the green light.
Then comes Kenneth Branagh, who says he has intellectual weight, spiritual gravity, and a powerful sexual and romantic presence.
Then,
I know.
Then comes another director, Alan Pakula, who says Denzel's like Sidney Poitier. Poitier did To Sir with Love and came out of it a huge superstar. Denzel is just starting to break through as a box office star in the same way that Poitier did.
It's
just crazy. Like one after the other after the other. I mean, Spike Lee. But Spike Lee is the only dissenting figure. And I think this is why he comes in when he does. Like Lloyd is like, okay, I need someone to like shake this up and be like, Denzel's been hard done by and Spike Lee's the man to do it. So Spike comes in, obviously as a black man, a black director here. And he's like, where he's at now, he would have been at a long time ago if he were white. Hollywood's not really open to accepting strong black men who aren't doing the buck dance and showing their teeth and grinning. I don't know why people think racism would not permeate Hollywood when it permeates every fiber of American society. I mean,
true.
This really rains on your parade about the 40, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, no, but and that's what I think I am thinking about is like we tend to celebrate like early success in a way of like everyone wants to be an A-lister at 21.
Right.
And it is because exactly of our like inherently racist society that just like isn't really an option for most young actors of color. It's like,
except take for Rachel Zegler.
I know.
She is the exception in many ways.
Yeah.
But Denzel has like a different take. He's saying it's not his delayed ascendancy is not because of the race factor. It's because he's just like, there are so many people trying to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, there's 250 million people in the country, maybe 40 million blacks and maybe 200 million whites. There are a lot of films that white people may not go and see because they see a black face. I think now they've seen my face more. It's like, oh, is that guy in the movie with Julia or that guy in the Tom Hanks film? Or maybe they could just say, he's a good actor. Yeah, I'll pay to go see that guy. He's so right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's exactly what a lot of white people do. Like they need to be shoehorned in by a white actor and then they trust someone of color.
He had like early champions, like Julia Roberts fought for him to be cast in the Pelican Report. Is that what it was? The Pelican Brief.
God, she's really everywhere, isn't she?
Because, and I think the author of the book that this was based on was like, no, his character was originally written as white.
Oh.
And she was like, no, it has to be Denzel.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And that really makes all the difference. Like it, it can. And especially like at this time, it's so interesting that, I mean, looking at like the political landscape in this moment and the fact that affirmative action was like being questioned, there really is this idea of like, hey, we're all on the same playing field, are we not? Mm-hmm. And that was a story that people really liked. And it was like, look around, like, look, Denzel's in movies.
Yes.
Like, it's all good.
It's all going fine. It's all good. Yeah. Very interestingly, he studied journalism.
I know. He acted. I couldn't wait to get into this.
He was like, I tripped and fell into it. And then, I mean, this paragraph is just full of juice. They talk about the fact that he is still remembered for his star turn in his college production of Othello. I mean, this is so full circle. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And I really loved this quote from one of his acting teachers who was like, yeah, back in the day, he had an afro and a goatee. And he was actually never in class because he had kind of learned what he had to learn and then he got bored. She says, with some people like Denzel who are naturals, they pick up their techniques very quickly and incorporate them into their own kind of technique.
Delicious.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say, acting in a way is like investigative reporting. Mm-hmm. You search out your character. His enormous affability punctuated by an explosive laugh. He has more charm than anybody I've ever met other than Warren Beatty, says one of the directors that he's worked with.
Yeah. And then he says that it like masks a self-protective guardedness, recalling a politician on a Sunday talk show. That is a very interesting line considering mm-hmm. what we will come to know and surmise about him. Mm-hmm. Self-protected guardedness.
And like he really does, I think, and it's clear that Lloyd feels like at ease with him. It's yeah. like you are someone that has like your feet on the floor.
Yeah, you're normal.
Yeah.
And I think he's always seeking out like normal experiences, right? Like he has put his children and family up in Charlotte, North Carolina to mm-hmm. keep them quote unquote grounded. Mm-hmm. They go on like family trips to Africa. He wants to eat at like local diners. Like he's yeah. very man of the people.
It's also so funny because during their trip to Africa, it could not be less normal. Yeah. They're like, him and his wife, Pauletta, they've been married since 1983. They met on his first like ever movie.
Yeah, we've got to talk about this, I feel.
We will. Let's save it.
Okay,
save
saving it. Okay.
But they renewed their wedding vows and that ceremony was conducted by the Archbishop Desmond Tutu. They also met Nelson Mandela and he was like playing with their kids. So that's not what most people experience when they're like on a little trip.
He came back from Africa and a lot had changed. And among the news that he received was that Hugh Grant was arrested for getting a blowy.
Yeah.
Well, that's full circle, isn't
it? It is. It really is.
Getting a blowy on Sunset Boulevard from a woman of the night. Mm-hmm. And Denzel reacts to this. To Lloyd. God, I wish we could have interviews like this now. I wish we could be like, what did you think about Hugh Grant getting arrested for that blowjob? Yeah. Anything to say about that? Mm-hmm. Because Denzel like answers for real. He goes, nah, not Sunset, man. Not me. I was reading where they said, what is it? 95% of men have hired a prostitute at one time or another. I was saying, well, I'm in that 5. One could argue that everyone is paid one way or another, directly or indirectly, but I'm in that 5. A guy like Hugh Grant, I mean, 2 years ago, no one knew him. And he hit so big with 4 weddings and a funeral. And I've been chopping wood for 15 years. So he's basically like, I've been here. I've been in this. I don't need to pay for pussy, baby.
No. That Hugh Grant is even in the public eye right now after like a couple movies.
Yeah.
Is a whole thing.
Exactly.
But Denzel is in the public eye. And there was an interview with Barbara Walters in 1993 that was very, very interesting. It was on the night of the Academy Awards in which he was the best actor nominee for Malcolm X. And he said, like, I'd never leave my wife.
But I may give her reason to leave me. Being a star and all that, temptation is all around. It's all around and I haven't been perfect. He was like, I'll never be that candid again. You try to be honest and you get stepped on. Hmm. When Mr. Mandela came out of prison, one of the things he found interesting when people interviewed him was they were so much more interested in his personal life than his politics. Welcome to the 90s, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
And we talked about this. If you're a Patreon subscriber, you've heard, but mm-hmm. there have been blind items about Denzel. And, you know, I would like to believe, certainly, that him and his wife, who've been married for, I mean, how many years? That's
50. 40.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Are perfectly happy and maybe you know, there's no truth to these blind items. But what the blind items have said, allegedly, is that Denzel has really like put on this image as like a family man. He has like two twins. His son is now a notable actor in his own right, but that he has a second family out there.
A full second family,
allegedly.
I mean, if that's the case, he set himself up so well with putting a family in Charlotte, North Carolina. He could have a full family in New York or LA. He's traveling so much. I mean, it's the perfect circumstance if that's true.
I know.
Yeah. I did find this quote so fascinating, though, about the fact that he's like, yeah, people are more interested in your personal life. Of course they are. Yeah. Like, of course they are. And I've even had this conversation with my own family members, with my sister, who was really frustrated when she started dating someone, like people being like, you know, I want to hear about this guy you're dating rather than her promotion. But this is like every celebrity in an interview. We don't want to talk about their movie that they've got coming out. We want to know their latest flame. Like, yeah, we want to know what's going on behind the scenes.
It's true. It is just like, it's natural.
We're just fascinated by it.
Yeah, it is. And there is something fascinating about it, like at the highest level, who millionaires are dating, who celebrities are dating, what's going on with them, where they're burning out. It's just, it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Completely. And so we find ourselves at sort of like one of the establishments that I feel like really does perpetuate his image as like the normal man.
Yeah.
Greasy Nick's, which is like a local.
That name could not be more perfect. Yeah. You're joking, Greasy Nick's.
Greasy Nick's.
It's like ChatGPT came up with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the locals call it Leno's Clam Bar. He gets a hamburger. It's very oily. It's, you know, you're greasy. It's Greasy Nick's. That's why you go to Greasy Nick's.
And they get a little bit into his background. His parents separated when he was 14. Him and his older sister were sent to boarding schools. His parents scraped together tuition money from his mom's beauty parlor. And that was kind of their way out of this like toxic household, mm-hmm. which is pretty smart of parents. I've actually never read it in a profile, never heard it from any friends of parents doing that, sending kids to boarding school to avoid fighting in front of them.
Yeah.
Kind of genius.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
I guess it didn't really work because Denzel was just still like, I was running around looking for fights all the time and fighting a whole lot because he just had this anger built up.
His father passed away. He was a reverend, Pentecostal reverend in 1991. Definitely drew on him to portray Malcolm X. You know, he kind of talks about how he's like, nobody I knew went to therapy growing up and I kind of work it out in the work. Like, maybe that's how I get it out. Who knows? But the ethos was kind of like therapy. Like, nobody can afford therapy. Like, get out there and get a job.
Yeah, he got a job really young, like 14.
11.
Oh, 11. 11. Oh my God, you're
right. At a barbershop.
You're right. 11 at a barbershop, like hustling away. And then he went to a post shop?
Yeah,
post office. Post office, yeah.
Yeah, he worked collecting trash. He worked at a sanitation department.
He got his first role as playing an Olympic track star, Wilma Rudolph's boyfriend in the television movie Wilma. And that was where he met Pauletta Pearson, right?
Yeah.
That was where he met his wife.
Yeah.
They've been married 12 years at this point. I just want to talk about this because I just had a drink with an actor who fell in a type of infatuation with his co-star on set. And he put it in no uncertain terms for me where he was like, everyone's cheating.
Yeah.
And if they're not, they're having emotional affairs. He was like, there is literally no way you can't. And it must be
so scary.
Yeah. He's like, it's impossible to have a relationship. Impossible.
I completely understand.
He watched his co-star's relationship fall apart as he was filming this movie.
Yeah.
It was just inevitable for all these people. I mean, Brad and Angelina, Jen never stood a chance.
I know. But then there are people like Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell that have been together for like 8 million years.
Yeah. I mean, that's true.
There are randomly.
But come on. Like, you don't know their arrangement.
It's true. No, it's true. And I do think that there are like, they are lightning strikes of like, people who have randomly, Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew Broderick, like there are random couples that have been together since they were like children in Hollywood mm-hmm. and have grown old together in a very sweet way.
And it seems like it's always actors on actors.
Yeah.
Like you can't break out of that because no one understands.
No
one can.
How could they?
The chemistry, the summer camp type isolation.
Yeah.
You were just like stuck 24 hours a day with someone. You're bound to just fall in love with them. It's Real Housewives.
Yeah.
It's Real Housewives.
At least a little bit.
Yeah.
My God, I mean, how can you not? Right now, he lives in Toluca Lake.
He has like an estate, right?
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, honestly, the foresight to buy in Toluca Lake is good. It's a beautiful little neighborhood
over there.
Beautiful little neighborhood in the valley.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's where a lot of Vanderpump stars bought, Toluca Lake.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
And he talks about, he's like, I don't need much, but then also goes into all the cars he's bought. Speaking of Toyota Ferraris.
It's the craziest thing. He's like, I don't need much. I only need like my Porsche, my Mercedes, my like.
Yeah, I have a Ferrari as well. Yes. He's making millions. He can get a little car.
Of course. What else is he going to do with all that money?
Yeah.
Come on.
And then we get like sort of pulled back. Lloyd takes us to Mohammed, who's driving the car around Mount Vernon. And Denzel is remembering, like, we used to ride our bikes around here. Lloyd asks him this crazy question.
It's a rogue as fuck question. It's totally rogue.
Ever have any trouble with the law? He said, no, I was lucky. That's all.
I guess, look, it's a crazy fucking question, but I guess it's a valid one. It's like relevant.
It's very 1995. Like, yeah. It's just like him saying something that like is a microaggression would recognize.
Totally a microaggression. But I guess it's also the climate. Like coming after Rodney King, it's like, yeah, policemen will attack you for no goddamn reason just because of your skin color.
Yeah.
Has that happened to you? Kind of. It's like such a hard one because like I get where he's coming from.
Yeah.
And then the way that Denzel replies really like validates that theory, I think, because he was just like, no, I was lucky. I was one of the lucky ones. But a few of my partners have done time. Mm-hmm. Guys I grew up with, some of them are still in there, some of them are dead, whatever. But you know that has to do with the influences around you. It can be as simple as luck, being in the wrong place.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was one of the people that when there was like sort of court-ordered school desegregation, he was bussed into like a nice neighborhood on the north side of town to be school there. And that was one of his first times like being a minority in like a white majority school. And he said he made friends, but one of the kids' dads didn't let him like into his house.
It's crazy. And he's still experiencing that today because he talks about trying to get a cab in Manhattan. And he's like, yeah, they don't know. They don't care what you do for a living. I cannot get a cab to fucking save my life. Like as a black man, no way. And then he catches the driver, Muhammad's eye in the rearview mirror. And he's like, you're laughing, right? Like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And Muhammad's like, sir, I'm Egyptian. Yeah. Sir, I'm Egyptian.
But also, yes.
but also, yes. He's like, white, black, it doesn't matter who you are. Muhammad says, you go and deal with me with respect. I'm going to deal with you with respect till I get hurt from an African-American person. And now we see this kind of like minority racism. And then Denzel goes, really? Driving? Like someone pulled a gun on you or something? And Muhammad says, yes, driving. I'm not going to risk my life for. And then Denzel goes, I hear you. So it's fear as much as racism. That's reality, man.
I know.
He goes, I've talked to cab drivers about it. They say, hey, you know, a guy put a gun to my head. So it's tough. It ain't fair. But getting shot in the head ain't fair either. Mm-hmm. It's like, fuck. And like he really like is seeing both sides. And you got to hand it to him. He's pretty self-aware.
And like handles like this interaction with like a lot of
such care.
So, yeah.
Because he could be so offended and like this generalization that all black men are violent and they're going to have a gun on them.
Which is also, I think, is so interesting. Like there is also a generalization, and one of the big stereotypes was that all black men are like hypersexualized.
Yeah.
It was like a big trope, like stereotype that existed specifically in Hollywood culture. There was this idea of like this like sexually intense black man and this like innocent, pure white woman.
Yep.
And that was like so oft depicted that way. And so it feels really dated and interesting that in this profile they're all talking about like how like sexual Denzel is.
Yeah, and he doesn't do sex scenes, and that seems like a conscious choice. Like he's only recently done a sex scene at this point in time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
And funnily enough, I mean, just as you say this, they like pull up to a boys and girls club, right?
Yeah.
It was like Denzel's hangout back in the day.
Yeah.
And they're greeted by the club's director, who's like, you're in killer shape, boy.
Yeah.
Like, you better get out of here or my guys are going to like take you out to hoop. But it's like, we get right back into his body almost immediately. It's like, don't forget.
He's so hot. He looks amazing right now. And he does. I mean, my God, he does. And so they're there, they're like in this boys and girls club, and we meet Charles McCutcheon, his best friend from childhood, whose mom he met at the start of this piece.
Yeah, the plumpish sad-eyed woman.
Yeah. So her son.
Yeah.
We're talking to him now.
Yep.
He says Denzel is strong-minded, he always had goals, things he wanted to do in life. I always looked up to him. And Denzel, you know, sort of like retorts that like, I used to think that he was cool and I wasn't. I wanted to be like him. Which is so sweet. It's like, think of how many friendships you had as kids where you were like both wanting to be the other person, kind of. It's like, I had so many friends where I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, you're so cool.
So cool.
Yeah.
And then this guy chimes in and is like, when are you going to give something back to the community?
Yeah.
Little guy in his 20s. And Denzel's like, hey, this is not the time or place to talk about that. Give me your phone number. I'll give you a call. Great way to handle that.
Mm-hmm.
A couple weeks later over the phone, Lloyd's like to Denzel, hey, did you ever hear from that fucking guy? And Denzel's like, yeah, he was trying to give me a script. Which is so funny. What a way in. Like, how ballsy. Yeah. To be like, hey, you. Like,
help me.
Yeah.
Come on and help me.
Oh, God, it's funny.
Yeah.
And but he's getting 40 scripts a month in LA.
It's true. And this is kind of where we leave it. It's like this, like, strange collision of, like, Hollywood and his old life.
Mm-hmm.
He says it's tough because you hear about so many people who are sick, so many people dying. Growing up, there was a wonderful time in my life. I'd love to be able to hang out in the playground and reminisce with people, but I can't anymore. Denzel sighs. As the saying goes, you can't go back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think you can go back home?
Definitely, I'm not too famous to go back home. Certainly, I don't think I'd be mobbed.
Is that Ivana Ryder from Uncover Girl?
I couldn't be. Here? But also, I don't really know where that would be. It's like Scarborough.
Yeah, where is home for you?
Your little teeny, you know, side pocket Toronto suburb. Like
where Justin Bieber and The Weeknd grew up.
Yeah.
Home for you is still Orange County, right?
Like, yeah, but say. There's no like place I can go there.
Yeah.
Like there's no home to return to or like childhood spot.
Your high school.
My high school. I could go back to my high school.
I know it's hard to go home. It really is.
Yeah.
It's like you've changed so much and it changes.
Yeah.
In its own way.
I know.
Yeah.
If you mix the ketchup and the mayonnaise together, you can't unmix them. It's like it's done. He's famous.
Yeah.
Is moving along. You can't like go back to how it was before ever.
And I hear a lot of people say that. That's kind of like the hot take from celebrities. Yeah. Once it's done. And no one teaches you that. I mean, Chappell Roan just went on, I guess it was Call of Daddy or something of the like, and was like, yeah, it's like a second puberty. Like you have to literally relearn how to be in your body. But it is so bizarre that you actually can't go back. Like there is no way. You can't leave the job. Like you're not, there's no chance of quitting and starting over.
Mm-mm.
Or having a new identity. You have the identity that's been thrust upon you.
Yeah.
And you got to stick with that. Like I really do think of Hailey Bieber right now. And I'm like, how you doing, girl?
Oh my God, I can't imagine.
I know. I wonder if any part of her like regrets marrying that guy.
Yeah.
Just with all the turmoil it's caused. I don't know.
Their day-to-day has to be spectacular for it to make sense.
Yeah. I mean, it has to, I don't know what would make it worth it. I don't know what would make it worth it.
No.
She could have had Shawn Mendes. She could have had a happy life with a man of questionable sexuality.
Simple.
A lavender marriage, if you will.
Sounds like a dream.
And she wore lavender to that Met Gala date. She did.
Yeah.
Yeah. She knew. She knew.
And then she knew.
I know. She's always known.
Yeah.
No. Would you want to interview Denzel? Are you?
Oh my God. Yes. But I think I would now be
a little bit nervous.
I think also it's because admittedly I am not super versed in his
law,
in his filmography. Like
no,
I feel
neither.
Like it's like, you know, Brad Pitt, like I saw Seven, which came out also this year. Like I saw,
yeah.
I've seen so much of his discography, like Samuel L. Jackson, like I've seen so many of his like incredible films. Like I followed his career. Denzel, I feel like I've just like missed
the big
I haven't
ones.
Seen The Pelican Brief.
No, I hear that.
So I think that's what it, I think I just need to watch more Denzel movies and then I'll really know. But now I'm nervous. I'd be nervous to interview him.
I don't feel any interest in interviewing him.
Yeah.
He just feels too out of reach.
Yeah.
The same way I honestly feel, and I've interviewed Samuel L. Jackson, but I just feel also there are some movie stars that don't like, I don't know, excite me in that way. I mean, it's funny, like even... They're just too big. They're just too big. They shine too brightly. Like even like a Ben Affleck is kind of like that for me.
Yeah.
Just a bit too big. Like Matt Damon is a perfect example for me. You are one of the biggest people on the planet. And because of that, I don't feel like there's much left for me to know.
Yeah.
And I'm not actually that interested to know.
No. And I also think you have to have a personal spark to them. Can I actually read you something that I read the other day that I found to be a perfect distillation of like, not just what we're doing here, but also like magazine writing, like everything that we talk about.
Yeah.
If the golden rule for a writer is to try to avoid situations where you find yourself writing something you wouldn't read, a similar calculus probably applies to assigning and editing stories. Magazines, unlike newspapers, aren't engaged in comprehensive coverage. Pieces that are gratuitous or dutiful, undertaken in a we should probably mode, usually stink like dead fish from a mile away. The defining experience of good magazine reading is, I didn't think I was interested, but... Magic happens when at least one person, a writer, a photographer, or an editor, has been allowed to fall in love.
It's true.
It's true.
Well, I mean, that's what anyone's trying to do is make, write, create something that they want.
Yes.
That they would watch. That was missing from the world. That they would engage. That they want to have.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reason I have always painted. It's to be like, oh, I want something for my wall and I don't want to buy it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to paint it.
Yeah.
And like that, I think is what we're trying to do with this podcast is that we've been like, oh, wait, this is something that doesn't exist and we'd like to hear it.
Yeah.
So we're going to make it.
Yeah.
That's any successful venture is like you do it for yourself, the audience. And just to quote Denzel, by the sheer numbers game, mm-hmm. there's going to be someone that also wants it.
It's so true.
Yeah. And that's why authenticity is so clutch. It's so key. I think the secret sauce in anything these days is just like authenticity and consistency. Like keep doing it authentically.
We just get to fall in love every week with like a new person, a new story, a new mm-hmm. thing. Like it is sheerly out of the passion for it. Like out of the love of it.
Yeah. And I think also now we're held accountable. Like that's the difference. Like other people have joined in yeah. the mission.
Yeah.
And now... we have to show up for them.
Yeah. You and I, crosses on our back. Dragging them up the hill.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
No, that really got me thinking.
Yeah.
Because I actually didn't come away from that feeling like he had a lot of passion for the craft of acting. I came away from that feeling like he's really good at acting and he's really hot.
Yeah.
But I didn't like get that spark from him. There was no quotes from him. God, I'd love to do this.
Yeah,
like
to immerse myself.
Yeah, there was no like Jeremy Strong-esque.
Yeah.
Like all the most like passionate quotes came from other people about him.
Yeah, like what it is to watch his work. Watch his performances.
He got most excited talking about Hugh Grant's sex scandal.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm in the 5% that doesn't pay prostitutes.
I feel he really seems to approach it like from an intellectual standpoint. How do I crack this character? Like, how do I figure this out? The investigative journalism piece of it.
And maybe it's like that. Maybe it's like a conquest. Like when you sleep with a woman, it's like once you've done it, it doesn't matter. Move on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe he has that approach. It's like that's why
the challenge.
The challenge. And once the challenge is done, then I find no interest here.
Yeah.
I can just keep it moving.
And he does have a lot of like challenging roles.
Because I never get the impression that he's also like seeking out the accolades the way that Timothy is. Petitioning for the Oscar.
Well, it's like because Timothy kind of knew he was going to be an actor always, it feels mm-hmm. like.
Like, oh my God, yeah.
He's and kind of did all the stuff that you need to. Young arts, like he like applied to the little programs.
Yeah, he wasn't working as a janitor or in the post office.
No. I'd love to know actually if he did have like a high school job, I'd kill to know.
The Xbox controllers. He like painted them and shipped them to people.
Oh my God.
You know that he Timothy did that? He customized Xbox controllers and shipped them out to people.
I didn't know that.
And posted them on YouTube. That. Yeah. So that was his like job.
That's sweet.
I know. I don't know if he had like also worked in an ice cream shop or something, but that's something.
That's something.
Just as we show up for you, you can show up for us. The weekly Patreon, please. And please review. That would mean the world. It's just so exciting to be able to read with you. This was a cerebral one.
It started
lowbrow. It did
high. High.
Yeah.
And then low again.
Yeah.
And
that's what you do. You buy low, you sell high.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing here.
That's what we're doing here.
Love you.
Love you so much.
Uncover Girl is lovingly crafted by Beatrice Hazelhurst and Ivana Ryder. If you want to get even deeper under the covers with us, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/uncovergirl or follow us on Instagram at uncovergirlpodcast. Rate Uncover Girl, write us a review, and share your favorite episode. Shawn Mendes, Rolling Stone 2018, anyone? And we will be your forever fans. Love you.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
all Sleep Number smart beds offer temperature solutions for your best sleep. And now, get early access to Memorial Day deals. Save 30% on our most popular smart bed, i8. Limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.